Hey, good evening, everyone. John Henry Soto here, along with George Batista. Welcome to Counterparts, where we spotlight conversations on creative minds, musical minds, amazing minds. Today, we have Kevin Eubanks is on the show. We're so excited. George and I are music nerds, as many of you know, and we are very excited to have him on here. We're going to be talking about, obviously, tonight's show, new music, old music, future music, everything having to do with music is going to be tonight. So please hang on tight, because it's going to be a lot of fun. If I can click this button. You know, when you're a one-man show, my mouse was like, I was like, click, start.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah, I hate that. So like I said, Kevin Eubanks is on the show. I just want to give a quick also shout out to Tracy Harper over at Harper PR and for setting this up. It's really awesome. We're super grateful for her to do that. And she's sending us a few other guests, so we're going to be bringing some great people here. So I want to thank you, Tracy, for that. Before we get started, George, we got some love for our sponsor.
Yes, we do. So. All right. So the Counterpart Show is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Find out why Wellness Resources supplements are the top choice of health-conscious individuals around the world. Go to myvitaminresource.com. And if you enter the promo code Counterparts, you will get free shipping on all orders. All right. So let's talk a little bit about our guest today. We are so excited to have Mr. Kevin Eubanks. So Kevin is an American jazz and fusion guitarist and composer. He was the leader of the Tonight Show band with the host Jay Leno from 1995 to 2010. He also led the primetime band on the short-lived The Jay Leno Show. Kevin continues to perform and tour as well with recent shows at Exit Zero Festival in Cape May, New Jersey, Denton Arts and Jazz Festival, and the Trinity Church Wall Street. His most recent musical project is the Eubanks Evan Experience with pianist Oren Evans. Was recently nominated for Best Duo, Group, or Band by the inaugural Jazz Music Awards. Kevin can also be seen as the co-host of Fox's hit comedy game show, You Bet Your Life, with Jay Leno, which kicked off its second season in the fall of 2022. And man, am I so excited for this conversation, John. I know you are. So yeah. Let's bring him up. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Kevin Eubanks.
Wow. Thanks, you guys. Thanks for having me, really. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
really.
It's such an honor to have you on here. This is so cool. We have so many... We have so many questions, and you know, usually these things go fly by. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to do as much talking as I do because I have a tendency of yapping. So I'm going to actually turn it over to George so we can start with our first question, and we're just going to rock and roll.
Absolutely. So this is a real treat for us, John and I, musicians as well. I've admired your music for many years. Have CDs of yours as well. So I know you come from a musical family, right? I mean, pretty much everybody in your family was playing something, right? So it's pretty much in your blood, you know, and it's definitely interesting because I remember, you know, when I was younger, I'm a drummer. So, you know, there was something about the drums that attracted me. I was always into rhythm. Rhythm was just a part of my soul. So it was no doubt that I was going to play drums at some point in my life. So I know you, when you were younger, I think you were playing multiple instruments, right? Especially in high school, you were learning different instruments at one point. What attracted you specifically to the guitar?
I don't really know. Okay. It's kind of weird. I started off playing violin. I played violin for 7 years. And in Philadelphia, my brother and I, Robin, a really great trombonist and arranger. And we went, I guess I was maybe 11 or 12 years old on the Uptown Theater on Broad Street. And and went to see James Brown.
Oh, wow. And
for some reason, when I came out of the James Brown show, I remember it. I mean, it's, you know, people say this a lot, but I remember pretty much like I was there, because I walked out. It was drizzling, a little bit rain. I was waiting for my dad to come and pick us up. And I looked down. I was right at the edge of the curb and looked down and watched the water going down the street. And I just looked up and said, I'm going to play guitar.
Wow.
And I don't know why, if you go to a James Brown show, why you think I would want to dance and sing, you know, for some reason I came out and said, I want to play guitar.
Wow.
And that's when it really, really started.
Yeah.
And I got a guitar for Christmas, and that's how it really started. It was from a James Brown show.
Look at that.
Wow. I mean, I guess no one really comes out of a James Brown show without wanting to do something.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
You know, luckily, it was a guitar for you.
On our block in North Philadelphia, we, you know, all the kids, you know, our age, we had a circle, and everybody would have to get in the middle of the circle and start singing their favorite James Brown song, and then you had to dance as much as you could, and we'd all just be cracking up laughing at each other. But everybody,
if
you tried to get out of the circle, they push you back in the circle, and then you go into your thing, and you start, you know. And then I remember one time I was twirling and twirling and fell down in the street. And, you know, James Brown had that one thing when he goes off and they put the cloak on him and throws it off and he comes back. I fall down in the middle of the street and everybody's saying, "What are you doing? What are you doing? Get up, get up." And I get up and I said, "Why did you do that?" I just would say, "I thought I was James Brown." And that was it. That was fun. That was, but to this day, I don't know why after that show, then I said, "Oh, I'm definitely going to play guitar." And that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's really just the spirit of music that gets in you. It's not, it could be any artist too. That's the thing. You know, I mean, it had to be, you know, James Brown for you, but it could be so many other different artists that just inspire someone. How many kids go in to see anything, a musical or something, and just come out being really interested in like something different that was in front there, but because the music, you know, just kind of something it lit up, you know, inside. That's amazing. What was the guitarist that you started then really following? Like, you know, after you said, you know, you looked into the rain and you're like, "I'm going to play guitar." What guitar player did you start following?
Well, that's a good question. The only thing I could remember was, I guess, my favorite guitar sound. And I was trying to get a certain kind of gritty sound was Terry Kath from Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He always had a really, he sang the same way, too. And he had this kind of gritty sound on his SG.
Yeah.
And I always was trying to figure out how to get that kind of sound to it. And I don't know. And then I just started trying to find sounds and this and that. Yeah. And then, you know, moving on a little bit more, you start getting into different guitars. But I was into a lot of different instruments too, not just the guitar.
Right.
So, which was really great because you can have so many things to pull from, especially having my brother Robin being a trombonist and my mother a pianist. So, and being a violinist, well, 7 years violin, I don't know if that makes you a violinist, but you're still trying at seven. Right. It's a difficult instrument. And so a lot of these things started attracting me. Organs, sax, trumpet, you know, all the different things. And then later on, you get into this guitar player, Dishorn player, and you get further and further and further into it. So I never really pulled out one guitarist, and but after a while you start getting into their songs, and then you start getting into them, and you start understanding, you know, this guitar player plays great rhythm, or this one plays, you know, has great tone in their sound, and their solos were so wonderful, and you start getting into a whole lot of things. And then I started realizing that whatever kind of music that turned me on, it just seemed like everything just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and not just for music, but it seemed like music kind of opened your mind up to a lot of things, mm-hmm. not just musical things. Right. So music was kind of this curtain that opened a whole lot of things up, and you start thinking about things in a different way, or having different questions, and start mm-hmm. reading all kinds of books. And I think all of it really started with the energy that comes in with music, because it just starts something churning in your mind, and what you're feeling like. And you start hearing the breeze in the trees, that became music. Or if you heard just the way rain hits the ground, or it hits mm-hmm. I love being in my parents' car, and when it rained, and nobody likes driving in the rain, but I was just sitting in the back, just hearing it hitting the rooftops, and always felt at home when I hear rain, lightning storms, all that, just it all seemed to be music to me, all of that. Right. So I think everything just speared everything more and more and more. And then, of course, you start getting into music and studying it and figuring out, you know, what things were.
Yeah. And music really lifts your awareness level. You know, it lifts you out. And that's what you were saying. It kind of unveils something in the world where you can then, because it just lifts you up spiritually, where you can then see things clearer. And like, I think George sent me something today. I didn't get a chance to read it, but it was something about music with children, right? And increasing.
Yeah, it was actually an article that I was reading about children who learn music when they're young actually mm-hmm. helps them cognitively as they get older.
Right.
You know, and it's true. And even you, Kevin, I've heard you in some of your interviews before where you've talked about, because back then, you know, I'm sure when you were young and John and I were young, music was a bigger deal, especially in school. Right. It was, you know, you could take the music classes and all that. And now it's not as big of a deal these days in school, you know, especially depending mm-hmm. on which schools you go to. But I heard an interview with you where you had said it should be, because it does prepare you for life as well. The ability to learn music, and the ability to, and like you were saying, to be aware of all these things, and music really does that.
Right. Whenever I do talks or master classes at colleges or high schools, wherever, you know, once I start, I just say everybody in the room may not be a musician, or people are, you know, they're just pulled into music and different things like that. Right. I said one of the things before we start talking and having conversation, I want everybody to understand how to listen like a musician would listen to.
Exactly.
And so when you're listening as a musician, I said all the musicians in the room, do you understand what it is like to listen as a musician and not judging, not I like this or I dislike this. You're just quiet and you hear everything like a baby listens to everything, like 360, everything that happens there, everything is just going in. Mm. And so when you listen like musicians, you shut down. You listen to best when you're silent, inside type of silence. Mm-hmm. So then everything is just coming to you. And before you start saying, oh, I don't like that, or that's too this, or I love this and that one, but you're not really, you have to be quiet. And that's why I always thought that the universe must hear everything, because it's just no sound. So
right.
With that silence, you can hear everything. It just, you know, and I've regretted so many times, like, just shut it down and listen. Just be a wonderful listener. And that helped you become a better musician, but also a better person, because you hear things, you listen things, you don't judge things. So listen, I always say, let's listen like a musician should listen.
Yeah,
I think it's important in art also to just kind of like listen and stop for a second and just take in. You know, there's an interview with Robert De Niro where he talks about, he's giving like sort of acting advice, and he says, you know, just do less. Always do less, because the what's around you is going to bring you to where you're supposed to be. What's happening in the scene is going to bring you there. But if you start off thinking, oh, okay, I'm going to go there because I know that the scene's going to go there, and you start off being there, well, then you're not really building up to the actual natural progression of where you're going. And so he talked about that, and it really applies to music and to all art, where you got to take a deep breath. And with music, you think about rhythms, you think about our hearts, you know, beating. I mean, it's always a rhythm going on in us, whether we like it or not, whether you're a musician or not, you're always in rhythm, you know, hopefully, you know, if your cholesterol is not too high. But
I love that whole picture that you just talked about. I love that whole thing that you don't have anything that you already premeditated once you get into it. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. Yeah. But you're going to be in this whole thing. So you just get quieter. You listen. And you just kind of morph into it and let it bring you along when you're listening to the music. And I always like to talk to myself and say, play the song, not the guitar, or you know,
right.
And that way, if everybody does that, then we're all doing it together.
Right.
So it's not about me, but everybody else can make everybody else the all the parts together just grow and grow and grow. So that's I love that what you just said about De Niro.
Absolutely. It's also like part of the evolution of a musician, because like you think about it when you're young, and I remember, you know, when I was young and I was playing, like John said, I wanted to be so fast, and I wanted to be so, I wanted everybody to notice all every
I be Buddy Rich.
Buddy Rich, you know, you want to be everything. And then as you grow older, and like you said, you start to listen, and you start to kind of listen to the whole band. It's funny. One of the compliments I got later, from a keyboard player who told me after we rehearsed, and he said, you know what I like about you? I said, what? He says, you listen. You're listening to everybody. I can tell that you're listening, because you know exactly where to place it and to be. And I was like the best compliment I had. It wasn't how fast I was playing or whatever. It was because I was listening and hopefully making, you know, the group a little bit better by what I was contributing.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, this is a great conversation, because I think a lot of, you know, in music in particular, you know, we're constantly, well, what is it that you're playing? What is the notes? What is the music? What is the, you know, it's like, no, we don't really talk much about the actual listening portion of it, where, you know, that hour that I sat in a chair just thinking about what I wanted to actually create.
Right.
That's just as important as the create itself, because that puts you in the mindset to be open enough to pull in whatever is going to come at you. You know, you got to be open for that stuff. So I love that. I love this conversation.
Definitely.
So I'm going to turn it over to George. George, do you have a question?
Absolutely.
I just keep yapping because I, you
know. No. I'm like so into the, so when you after you were, you know, in high school and you, you know, obviously the James Brown and see, were you, what kind of style were you playing in the beginning? Were you more funk and that type of thing? Because obviously James Brown and that type of thing, or were you kind of doing a little bit of everything?
I was doing, funk music, rock music. When the period that I think is fusion music was very short-lived in the 70s, and I got into that really strong into that, because I liked the technique that was needed, and so that kind of you know, challenged me a lot more. So I got more and more in that, and that helped me develop technique and all the different rhythms and time signatures and things like that. So I got more and more into that. And then I loved listening to people like Janis Ian doing singer-songwriter things when I was really young. And but I listened to then I started wondering, what are these notes? What are these chords? What is this? So I got more and more into jazz, which was a bigger part in my family was jazz. My Uncle Ray Bryant, great pianist, played with everybody from Train. Morgan, that it's not, you know, Betty Carter, just way more people than I ever thought. My mom was always playing gospel music and classical music, so I started wondering, like, what are they doing? What is my mom doing? What is my Uncle Ray doing? And I'd look in the books and see what it is. So I became more of a kind of a student of it, and you know, so I said I need to learn more, right. And so that got me into a whole lot of different types of music, which really helped to this day. And one of my regrets is that I stopped playing violin. I think if I had enough energy and purpose to do violin and guitar, which is probably probably very difficult to do. Probably take you a good 10 years just to get your intonation in violin, but I always still love violin. And so when I had a record that had Jan Hammer and Jerry Goodman and John McLaughlin and Billy Cobham. And then I loved hearing the violin with the guitar playing some, you know, rock fusion music. Oh, man, that's wonderful, you know. So I would just scratch these records up like crazy trying to, you know, figure things out. So that gave me that lifted me to a different step, even Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. And then I started listening to Oscar Peterson and Wes Montgomery and Train, Cannonball, everybody, you know. And then I found something that was very interesting for a couple of musicians. One was Jimi Hendrix, and the other one was John Coltrane. And there was something about those two musicians that every time I put the record, I said, "Oh, let's transcribe that." And every time I started thinking about doing it, I said, "Why?" But I was transcribing a whole lot of other things too. But whenever it came to Train and Jimmy, I said, what is it in me that's saying there's no point in transcribing these two musicians?
Interesting.
And I just kept thinking, I said, because I would try and, you know, I would transcribe, you know, a Train solo or something like that. And then I wouldn't say I was sad after I did it. It just seemed like something's not right about this. And I had the same feeling with Jimmy. So it really started bothering me. I said, what am I missing? There's something that's and then it was interesting. And then I was looking in the ocean and I said, I got it. I know why this is superfluous. Why would you do that? Because they're not coming back. They're not saving energy from, like, if you have a race in the ocean, the only way to win is to keep going.
Right.
You're not saving energy to come back.
Right.
Train was going. Jimmy was going.
Yeah.
They weren't coming back. They didn't, they weren't, you know, saving, you know, energy to go after that. They're just soaring and that's it. And I said, so the notes were great, were this or were that, but I said, you're not going to get anything in that because it's the energy and the way they're moving is what is the magic of it. It wasn't the harmony, it wasn't the notes, even though all of that was there, but it seemed to me that energy was, I said, there's no point in doing that. So, and that the thing that it changed in me was, you know, the energy that comes from musicians, that comes from music, that comes from all of these things, all of the music that came from the 60s, which helped change the society and the country in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And listening to a lot of the music and musicians, instrumental and vocals, all that, different genres that changed things. And it wasn't, you know, we get taught to education, you know, I'm going to copy this, I'm going to learn that, one harmony is this, what's this and that and the other. But it was the energy that was coming out because of all the things that were happening in the country. And that turned you into a flame. So, and once that got in you, then it was, you wanted to embrace a lot of it. And then start saying, there's no reason to transcribe that. It's not, it started with Train and Jimmy. And then I started saying there's no, because their energy, the energy of the 60s that helped, you know, everything that was going on in the country. So it wasn't just the music. It was, you know, there was a purpose in the music. There was an energy in the music. And then that was like, whoa, it was. And then everything turned to be more original once you respected that and understood where it was coming from. So I never really thought about the transcriptions went down a little bit. There's this and that, you know. So it's the energy that gets into you that gives you that, the flame. Once that flame flicks on, it changes things.
So it's that's interesting. I never really thought of it that way. But you also look at guys like I, when you were talking about Train and Jimmy, I was thinking Stevie Ray Vaughan for me was like somebody that I never sit there and try to play Stevie Ray Vaughan because it's sort of like, why would I do that? Like that was his, he was on a rocket ride, you know, he was on a rocket ride. And, you know, he's, and that music is still kind of rocket riding and as well as Jimmy, but to try to get on that. And maybe that's one of the reasons, you know, I've always been, and George knows this about me, that I've never been one to do covers of songs. Like I'll do some Santana stuff and, you know, maybe a Clapton little lick here and there, but I've never wanted to sit down and learn a song note for note. Cause I always felt weird about it. And I think what you just said kind of like answered a lot for me because it's sort of like, yeah, it's that, that's the energy that they created and that's theirs. I can listen to it. I could admire it. I could even at home mess around with it. But to sit down and really try to get into that, I need to take that positivity and then create my own energy being inspired by that and then create my own work. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm getting from what you just said, which is like a master class right now.
I mean, I love that when I hear, you know, hear Jimmy doing Wild Thing. I don't want to hear anybody else play Wild Thing. It's just certain things like that. Janis Dean does the song called Stars. And it's like, it was just so, you know, and I've heard other people, even Nina Simone, I've heard do it. And I just want to hear, and I love Nina Simone. Talk about energy. But I love hearing, I'm not comparing them to, but it's just the way Janis sang it, it made it feel like somebody was reading a book to you about being a musician. You have a name that you never owned and lyrics like that. And stars that come and go like the last light of the sun. and if you feel that way, I mean, you're looking at the sun, but you start looking at careers and it has that same thing about it. It's almost like a synopsis of being musicians. And so to me, that's Janis' song, that's Jimmy's song. I mean, whoever, you know, I mean, Janis wrote that one, I just want to hear that person do that. I just want to hear what's going on with Marvin Gaye. I don't want to hear anybody else. You know, and that feel that he had to it, it just, so then, you know, being yourself, which is not something you have to try, but you just move all the clouds out of the way and then there's clarity.
I mean, the bottom line is that you can pay tribute to those artists, you know, but you can't really recreate that energy. You can pay tribute, you know, and that's great. You know, I mean, I'm in Nashville, so I walk down Broadway here in Nashville, you know, I'll hear Living on a Prayer from four different bands at the same exact time. Right. Great, you know, great song, you know, but I mean, are they creating the same energy as four bands doing it at the same exact time? I can't even, you know, one is like two bars ahead of each other and I'm all over the place, but you can't really create that energy. All you can do is really admire it and then use it to create your own. I love that.
Everybody's different.
Right.
Everybody's fingerprint is different. Everybody is this. Everybody's, you know, you don't have to become something if you already are.
Right.
So don't, you know, you can learn. So I love playing with people, not just musically. It's not this myopic attitude about, oh, it's all about music. It's all about music. It's just another way of energy, passing it to this and passing it to that. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is that it's all moving. It's all universal. It's all this. It's and you're flowing in it. You're not even doing it. You're it's spinning now. We're moving now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So all of that is after a while you just let it flow and then the originality comes through.
Yeah.
And it just has a different feeling than the way you listen to things and watching snow fall, but you're in the house and you're looking through a window and it's just so quiet and you see all these particles coming down. It's almost like looking into space, but it's moving.
Hmm. You know, sorry, George, I'll give you a chance.
Go ahead.
I'll let you talk in a second. But I've heard
you guys know each other, huh?
Yeah.
So I've heard it called also like an aesthetic wavelength where people and that level can operate where they're at this wavelength that's you can visit like Jimmy and all those guys, you know, you can maybe kind of from down here visit those areas, but there's just in such an incredible space to try to get to, but you have your own aesthetic wavelength that you can aspire mm-hmm. to and stay there as well. But I love what you said. You don't have to become something if you already are. And that's like really knowing really what you are. Because then you don't question that, you know, if you really know that.
Yeah. It's, you know, you start feeling the heart inside of you. Mm-hmm. Instead of I want to get here, I want to get there, but you already are there. Just
right.
Where's the starting line? Exactly. It's in you.
I love
it. And once you get, you know, more and more, you get more confidence in that, mm-hmm. and everything becomes more and more original. And your whole competitive and egoistic way of what you're doing that starts to come down a little bit. Because it's not everything that you go and get, it's all the things that you are. And once that becomes part of you and a day-to-day thing and you have confidence in it and it's you can embrace other people and you're not competing in that kind of way. Mm-hmm. So all of that changes not just the music, but it changes a lot of things.
Yeah, I love it. Go ahead, George.
I'm gonna ask him two questions now. Well, number one, we had a gentleman. I just wanted to bring this up really quick. We had a gentleman named Steve Smith on. Mm. Amazing drummer, right? Absolutely. And I told him that you were going to be on the show, and he wanted me to mention really quick to you. I don't know if you remember playing with him. You guys played in a band called the Tommy Campbell Band, and it was at Pooh's Pub.
Pooh's Pub in Boston.
Yeah, so he just wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
Oh, yeah, man. That was the college years, man.
Yeah.
That is so wild.
That was our spot. We played there like crazy, man. It was wonderful, too.
Wow.
It was a great season of years of playing with all these people that came to Boston, went to Berkeley, and but there was a lot of clubs around, you know, and things like that. That was a beautiful, you know, I was as broke as you could possibly be. I mean, right. Really, I was just, that's when I first became vegetarian, was in Boston, because it was, you were forced to be. I didn't have money to buy, cheesesteaks and hamburgers and stuff, which is what I wanted, but I was just too broke. And it was just cheaper to become a vegetarian. And a lot later on, I've turned into vegan and everything. It started just because I was broke, and it was just cheaper. And little by little, I just got used to it, and I started, feeling that better. And that opened up different things too. But
yeah,
I mean, we were all just broke. I mean, we just, the little boxes of pasta, and we would just get butter, and just that was a meal, and it was terrible.
When you look back at that, though, you're like, at the end of the day, that was a whole part of it. It was that whole part of that beautiful journey that you were on at that time.
Yeah.
You can think about it now and go, wow, what I went through, what I had to sacrifice in order to get to where I am now, right?
Yeah, all of that is part of it.
Yeah, and, yeah.
But this energy was pulling you.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to do something else. It never crossed your mind. I mean, I worked for it was in Boston, if you sign up for something, I got the name of it, and all you did was labor. You put leather skins in a clothing freezer, and you go someplace else and you do this. God, I almost had what the name of it, and I couldn't believe I was doing it. But but all I could think about was getting back home and practicing. I never finished that song. So I couldn't wait to get back. But that's just all part of it. Yeah. And you just keep moving and moving and moving, because you have this thing that's pulling you. You're not angry about it. You're not thinking about turning back. And you're just moving forward, because it's part of you.
Yeah,
I mentioned manpower. That's what it was called. Manpower.
Oh, manpower. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. I mentioned this quote by Joe Walsh a lot, because he talked about how when you're in it, it's just like the most grueling, the worst. You're still going forward. You're still moving forward. But at the end of it, when you come out of it, it's this well-crafted novel that your life became. Because when you're in it, of course, Joe Walsh had a little bit of a different, different life than we had. He wasn't talking about becoming a vegan. But the overall message was basically that when you're struggling, you're writing your novel, basically,
Right.
So that's a great thing, George.
Yes, absolutely. So talk a little bit about your album with Oren Evans.
Oh yeah, this is I got some questions about.
Yeah, awesome. We both have a mindset that we want to play off of what's happening,
right.
And I love playing in duos, and I love playing with piano. I always play piano as a hobby, just growing up with my mom and my uncle. And so Oren and I both are from Philadelphia. His mom and my mom knew each other. One sang, his mother sang. My mom always played piano and sang too. So we kind of have this thing that just, then one day we just started talking about, let's just do a duo thing. And let's just, so we're sitting, what kind of thing we want to do is, why don't we just do it? And then see what it is, instead of trying to figure it out first. Let's just start doing it. And so we did the recording, and then when we started doing more, actual gigs, and we said, wow, man, the live stuff goes in so many different places, and I wish we could get that in the and put that on a record too. But we did a gig in a place called Chris's here in Philadelphia, and we recorded it, And but the recording was almost done, and we remember remember that thing we did at Chris's? Didn't we record some of that? And we said, we did. So we got that, and just all this live stuff. I mean, and we were just making up stuff, and we do it together, you know. Said, you want to put that on the record? The rest of it's in the studio. Said, yeah, let's put it in. So we're playing, and then you hear, you know, the glasses clinking and all that. And said, you want to edit that out? No, let's just leave it.
that's part of it.
Let's just see what happens. And so we just got more and more into it. So that's kind of how it just developed. We just let things go. And it's so much fun. And I like the idea of things just evolving into whatever they're going to do. I really enjoy that.
Yeah, and I love the record, and and you're right, it's very loose. It goes like there's, you know, first you're hearing Dawn Marie, which is just really chilled out, awesome track. I mean, just it's like an incredible track. And then Variations of on the Battle come on, and then I'm like, and then I feel like I need to pack and move because I did something wrong. I feel like I'm in a film, and I'm like, because this piece is like literally amazing. This was part of the live section, I'm assuming.
Right, yes.
And it was like, what inspired that? Because I was listening to it, and I was like, man, I was so blown away by where it went emotionally, but it also energy wise. But you guys were on, it seemed like you guys were improvising, but also on the same page as well, which is the best place you can be.
Yeah, you start to make up the entire song, you just lean on each other.
Yeah.
And if it goes that way and you feel that energy's coming up on this side, and you just let it happen, and everything peaks and comes down as long as you're not being abusive. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And you look out for the next person, you look out for each other, and say, oh, wait a minute, you know, this is turning on, you know, and then you step back and that person goes and goes, and then before you know it, you're the only person playing.
Right.
And, you know, and at some points though, you realize that just stopping is comping to that. Right. It's just a long rest. Right. You know, right, in the song, you know, like, you know, oh, 3-bar rest. Right. But that empowers the stuff that you do here. So it makes it, what's it, you know, when you right before the sun comes up and you hear this, you know, you see the colors changing and birds start singing more and everything. But right before that was really, really quiet, and that makes that bloom.
Right.
So sometimes you just watch the whole thing, just, you know, and you just let it happen. It's like, nope, don't get up yet. And then when it goes up, and then you give it some support underneath. It's like a comet, and that sometimes like comets aren't coming back. I'm gonna be the tail and keep it up, keep it up there. And you know, so I had a sax player named Sam Rivers that I played with for a few years, and he and I, before we the whole thing, I mean, there's words, amazing, great, you're killing it, you're this and that. It's like, okay, I don't want to use any of these words anymore about because it just seems like it's, you know, you're talking about a million other people. Sam and I, before every show, Sam and I would talk about planets and talk about sound and talk about things like that, and says, which side is up, because the people be on that equator, they're down. So how do we know which way is up, which way is down, which is left, what is right? You know, I said, but that's music. He said, who said so? And we would talk about that. He says, if I'm playing a solo and, you know, and I'm playing and I'm realizing that, you know, my energy, I'm burning it out. And he said, oh, and then here you come giving me some comping and you're getting the tail of the comment. And I go, oh, now we'll get to the next level. Now we're going. He says, that's what we're talking about. You know, and it started making sense to me. And he said, the planet's moving. It's live, man. It's real. You know, it's just smiling, but we don't know how to interpret it.
Right. Unless you're a flat earther, then you're in trouble. But I'm not going to go in there. That's another show.
yin and yang.
Yeah, exactly. well, we're at 45 minutes and we haven't talked about
really?
Yeah, I know. I said it at the beginning. This is what happens. We want to talk a little bit about your time on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. That was where the country got to know you, and you became such an intricate part of that show for so many years. How did that come about? Well, you know, early on, how was that? Did you audition for that?
No, they asked me to be in the band, and I was touring a lot during that time, early 90s, like 92. And I was getting a little burnout because I was in New York. I had good record deals then. And I was traveling quite a bit and studio a lot, and it was wearing me out a little bit. And then they came up and said, oh, you want to be in a band and Tonight Show? I said, really? Okay. They said, yeah, we need a guitar player. So I go in.
That's so cool.
And then after a while, they just said, we want you to be the band leader. And I know all these are all my friends in the band.
Right.
And they said, we really want you to be the band leader. Talked with the band and everything. And they said, yeah, man, you know, you just do it. And that's how it became. I had not met Jay before then, or had no inkling of wanting to be on television. Or I used to watch Johnny Carson a lot and stuff like that. And I'd never met Jay before, but we kind of had a sense of talking with each other a lot whenever we were in the studio, when I was just playing the guitar in the band, and I was doing some arrangements and stuff like that too. But we would always kind of talk. I mean, Jay talked with everybody. it wasn't just me. and then we just got more and more easier and easier to talk with each other. And then that same thing started winding up on the set, that because we were so used to talking with each other, and that it just started happening on stage. And it just started becoming part of the show. So, and then that turned into skits. It turned into this. And then one day I said, what am I doing? when did all of this start? And I had to put on these clothes and be this, and he's doing that. And before you know it, it was Hollywood. And it was, because I thought I would probably, do it for 3 or 5 years. Can't remember when the contracts were then. And I said, they'll probably want to move on or something. Or I said, I want to get back on the road and stuff. But it just got bigger and bigger. And I started learning more and more things. I started meeting everybody more and more and more. B.B. King, we became really good friends.
Wow.
Buddy Guy, Willie Nelson, and the guy that was driving all the time. And then Gates would come in and say, Kevin, Willie's waiting on you. I was like, okay, I'll be, and then I'd go to his bus. And he'd always come in on a lot. He played the show pretty often.
Yeah.
And I would just hang out with Willie on the bus, and we would just play chess.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice. That's awesome.
We only took a couple of moves, and we're like, okay. So we just sit in the bus, and he says, I don't really trust people that come on the bus that don't want to share some tea. And no, I love tea. So, and then we just become, you know, friends in that way. And then I would go to his shows, and then I would, you know, we'd talk about a lot of things. And I mean, one thing was really funny. I came off the bus, which was, we did, you know, whenever he was there, I always went on the bus. And one of the executives, I would come off the bus, getting ready to go into the, back into the building, into the studio. And guy named Rick, he would come out and he would see me coming. I could say, oh, Rick's standing there. He's just waiting to look at me. So I come in and he goes, hi, Kevin. How'd everything go? Everything went really well. I talked to Willie and I said, you know, the song had to be 3 minutes and 40 seconds and not anything more than that. And it's the song. He said the song was still going to sound really good. And he said, I appreciate you coming in, letting us know what would be the best thing for the show. And Rick said, okay, that's really good. I'm completely wasted.
Right.
And I'm trying to pretend.
You're trying to be really like professional and like.
And I said, and everything I say, well, what do you think, we have a good show today, Rick? He says, yes, we're having a great show. And as soon as he turns away, I go like.
Sweating.
Try to go to my office and regroup before.
Yeah.
All of that was so much fun. And and working with Jay and watching how much work goes into comedy and how, you know, the timing and all of that turned into. So, okay, how can I contribute to what's going on to the show? Not just that the band sounds great, but does it work with the show? The musicians could play all kinds of different stuff. I said, but how about we hang out with some classic rock and classic funk? I think that would actually be a big contributor to what the show was doing.
Yeah.
And people were saying, you should do more jazz. You should do more of this. You should do more. I said, I do, but just not here. It's not,
right.
we're playing for the show. The band is comping for the show.
Right, exactly.
And once we got into that, it just got more and more fun. So don't feel guilty because we can play all this other stuff, but let's hit some of this. Let's hit, you know, some Jimmy, some Chicago, some Zeppelin, some whatever. Sly and the Family Stone, we played Everyday People. Every day.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say that it seems like that whole experience actually helped to train you, because right now you're co-hosting with Jay, right? Doing your Battle Life, right? And then immediately, because I've watched a few episodes of it, you can see the chemistry between you two there in this show. So it actually helped that whole experience. I feel I'm sure you feel the same, that it actually helped you out with this, right?
Oh, I had no idea that it was just an ongoing thing. It just just kept going. And doing this show, You Bet Your Life, this is our second season. And the main thing that I had to get used to was not having a guitar and not having a band.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, so I said, wow. So I had to kind of get used to that. And first I was, you know, saying, I want to have a guitar there, so maybe I can figure out a way to do something in this new show, but still have a guitar. And I talked to a really good friend of mine named Jerry here in Philly. We grew up together. He's a guitar player. We met each other when we were 13 years old. His band was next door to my mom and dad's house. And I'm turning up all loud and they knock on the door. You live here? Yeah. I said, come play with our band. And we all... Jerry have been friends ever since. So I called Jerry and said, I don't know, man, without the band, without a guitar, and I'm just, you know, being a co-host. And he said, what are you talking about? Just go ahead and do it. Just leave the guitar. Don't talk about it. Just leave your guitar at home. And said, you're going to be playing guitar. You've been playing your whole life. You're going to keep playing your whole life. So you're just going to a different set. And, you know, just keep an open mind. Like you have an open mind when you're learning different kinds of genres of music. Just do it, and you and Jay are cool. So it just, I got, you know, more and more relaxed with it and stuff like that. So, and it's working with Jay, and he's so he's just so good at, you know, phrasing everything and how to keep things moving and this and that, but keeping the comedy, and comedy is not just jokes. Comedy is energy.
Right.
Yep.
So if you can release that energy into other people, then it all comes back and everything is just circular and it comes back and it goes out and it comes back. And when you're playing shows, you know, with the, you know, you're both are musicians, when you're touching the people, they reach back and touch you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I have a question, because in those last 50 years of the Tonight Show, there were only two band leaders. Maybe there might have been one in the middle there for a little bit, but generally there was only two band leaders. Did you get to talk to Doc Severson at any time during a?
I've never met Doc.
Really? Wow.
And what I want to do now, because people were talking to me about Doc Severson, and I said, I can't believe I never saw him. But you know, that's how, you know, this set is out and the new set's coming in.
Yeah.
But I would love to have lunch or dinner with Doc Severson, really. Like with Ed McMahon and these, people like Don Rickles and stuff like that. So I'm hanging out with these cats and learning so much from them.
Right.
Absolutely. And I always wanted
Doc Severson. He balanced that really well. I mean, he had Clark Terry in the band and just these great jazz musicians in that. And Doc kept his cool. Everything was, you know, did his gig, and it really helped support the show and all that. It was great the way he ran that.
Yeah.
Clark Terry would have been a wonderful host too. So, but everybody stayed cool with it. You know, you got these, you know, and so all of that to me, I was, that was very impressive to me that all of these people were there at the same time and everybody was cool with what they were doing.
Yeah. And, you know, it was such a different thing. Cause I mean, George and I were there during that whole time. We're huge, like Tonight Show fans, you know, Johnny Carson, and the change was so, because you're right, you know, Doc would come out with those crazy jackets and those really loud, right? You know, and Johnny would always be like, you know, what is that? You know, and they'd always go back and forth. And then, you know, Jay and the team come in and everyone is sleek, dressed. It was like wow, we are in a new era. You know, it was really great.
Man, when I became the band leader, I said, the number one thing is no ties.
Right.
Ah, nice.
That's over. We're just coming up, man. We're going to have fun. We're going to loosen it up. We're going to do this. I don't care what you're doing. You can come in doing whatever, you know, as long as you're contributing, as long as you're in, you know.
Yeah, so
You know, if you got to put eye drops in, put them in. Just do your job right. You know?
Exactly.
You're grown people. Do what you got to do. But just do your job, contribute.
Yeah. I love that. Wow. So we're at almost an hour here. Wow. I wanted to, first of all, I want to thank you for being on, because this has been such a treat. We could go on another hour, I'm sure. one of the things that we always talk about here, George and I, is about the last 2 years, you know, people going through different challenges in their lives. And we usually ask our artists, you know, if there's anything that they've did themselves to help them through those 2 years that they can actually impart to our audience, that maybe somebody out there is kind of going through something and could use some words of encouragement.
That's interesting that you ask that, because I went, something happened. I was on an airplane and one of the flight attendants was being very inappropriate the way she was talking to me on the plane, and it actually stunned the other people that were sitting there. I mean, really, like in my face, yelling at me, and I could just, I was like, what, who, you know? So I looked at her, and then she just kept, you know, she stopped and started looking at me, and she said, well, I said, you should love yourself more. And everything just froze.
Whoa.
Wow.
And she didn't know what to do. And she just backed up and she didn't know what to do. And everybody was just looking at her, you know, and it's everything, you know. So sometimes when you get caught up in something or, you know, you know, just love yourself more. Yeah. Not in an ego sense, but, you know, who you are to yourself and you're in this, you know, this is how you're circumventing this life. And love yourself more. So not grabbing it and taking it from someone else, because you're not going to love yourself more for that. Right. So, and that just came out. And when that came out of me and her whole face just
dropped. I mean,
whoa. So sometimes when I get in certain situations, I just say, musically quiet, you know, like a musician, and just love yourself. Just love yourself more.
I love that. Wow. Oh, man. So, Kevin Eubanks, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been such a treat to have you on. We hope at some point in the future you come back again and we can pick a topic and just break it down. We'd love to do that at some point. But thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure, man. And this has been a great conversation. I mean, it's just like I'm hanging out with you guys. I'm like,
yeah.
Do I know you guys?
That's it, man. We're like, just hanging.
Like, I remember you guys. We went to school. And I'd like to ask you guys questions too, because I like to talk to people that are, you know, musicians. We talk about things and musicians. And I always try to remind, you know, I'm talking to other musicians and particularly, you know, younger ones that, you know, are called students. Right. We all are, whatever age we are, we're all students. Right. But I always just say, you know, you're not just a musician. You're intelligent, you're creative, you see things, you can be quiet, you know the difference between being quiet and listening. So you have all of that. So you're not just a musician. You're something deeper than that. And just remember that. And it just comes out in your music.
I love that. Thank you.
Amazing. Amazing.
That's so awesome. That's so awesome. You're awesome, man. Thank you so much for being on. We appreciate you very, very much.
Thank you for having me. I really had a great time with you guys.
Great.
Thank you.
So much fun. I mean, if the three of us were in a room and we just start putting record, you know, putting songs on and stuff like that, you know, we would just be, you know, before you know it, we'd be jamming.
Yeah, yes. Hours would be gone. We'd be just jamming. Yeah, I can totally sense that. Yeah, that means a lot to us, man. Yeah, thank you
absolutely.
So much.
Absolutely.
I hope that happens at some point, man. That'd
yeah,
cool.
Why not? You're in Philly. I'm in Nashville. George is closer to you.
Yeah, there man. I can meet you, man. Let's do it.
Days.
Let's do it.
We'll make it happen. All right. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys, man.
We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Wow.
Wow. What a conversation.
Just exactly what, you know, what you think you want to have.
Yes.
You know, like,
yes.
But like 100 times better.
Better. Exactly.
You know, yes. Like I was just like, that was so cool. So, all right. Well, you know, George and I usually after we end this broadcast, we end up talking for another hour, especially when we're inspired by ourselves, when nobody's watching.
Yeah.
We talk about how lucky we are that we get to do this and to meet these incredible individuals. So I want to thank Kevin for being on again. And thank you all for watching. We appreciate you very much. We'll see you all next week, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here for Counterparts. George Batista, I'm John Henry Soto. We'll see you next week. And as always, peace.